Thank you. Thank you for having me here. I'll first speak about a few theoretical aspects of quantum gravity phenomenology, and then I'll concentrate mostly on some data analysis work that we have done lately. Okay, so this is more or less when one thinks about phenomenology, is something in between the theoretical investigation and the data analysis. One observes some data, has some inspiration for a theoretical investigation, and then phenomenology should translate these theoretical investigations into parameters to analyze, and then data analysis and so on and so forth. So, okay, let's go on with part one. Everybody knows what's the main issue with quantum gravity, which is that if we try to probe some region of space characterized by a length scale of more or less the order of Planck length, which is 10 to the minus 35 meters, we have no idea of what would come out, and we have no idea even if anything would come out. So, since we don't have a particle accelerator bigger than the galaxy, we need some magnification mechanism, like, I don't know, some way to compose quantum gravity effects, quantum effects, in order to obtain some macroscopical effect. So, what comes to my mind is, for instance, the example of compact stars. In compact stars, the pressure makes the Pauli repulsion avoids that fermions superpose with each other. So, composing 10 to the 56 of those particles brings you to microscopical pressure, which balances the gravitational attraction, and then you have a microscopical manifestation of this Pauli principle, which is the existence itself of neutron stars or white dwarfs, etc., etc. So another thing that we need when we talk about quantum gravity phenomenology or phenomenology in general is some simple generic formula to test. So the most common formula that we know is a modified dispersion relation. It's actually due to the fact that if we introduce some dimensional parameter in our analysis, we will have this kind, probably, this kind of deformation. So, there are three main lines that I will show here, the application of this modified dispersion relation on in vacuo dispersion, which, could give us some in vacuo dispersion effects. I will briefly mention the effect on the pressure of a compact star, and I will also talk a little about rainbow matrix, because there's which is a sensitive issue actually. Then we will come back to that lately. So okay, let's begin. I mentioned the example of compact stars. Because I worked on compact stars when I was young, and if we introduce the modified dispersion relation into the Chandrasekhar model, we obtain this kind of deformations. When we obtain this formula, we were very happy because we obtained this magnification mechanism, which gives us this macroscopical effect, and we were pretty happy. The problem is that, Chandrasekhar model has these macroscopical effects, but the actual physics of compact stars doesn't. because you know Chandrasekhar model is good until here, more or less. Then you have to introduce general relativistic corrections, and then that's another problem because we don't have a quantum gravity version of Einstein equations. So yeah, you may have an effect, a mathematical effect, but you don't have you cannot predict any actual physical effect. And that's one problem with quantum gravity phenomenology, which is that you have to really know what you're saying. You don't just have to obtain some mathematical result, but you have to know the physics of the models you are dealing with. And that's something that not all authors take care of.
So I have a question about, because you mentioned that in your slide, when you say that you model the phenomenology by just a modified dispersion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in physics we use, so this is the propagation, but we also use the interaction, which is the composition of momenta. So
yes.
What you really, you know, in practice, measuring is the combination of the two. For instance, it's possible to just make a change of coordinate or momentum space that changed both. But
yeah, I'm not going to mention the composition of momenta in this
okay.
Talk.
So when you're talking about the phenomenology, you're assuming that the composition of momenta stays the same, and you're just changing the propagation.
No. Those were two different articles, and you can obtain a significant effect both using a modified dispersion relation and composition of momenta. Yeah.
I agree that if you rotate both in a synchronized way, nothing should happen.
It depends. It depends from the model.
If it's just a change of coordinates.
If it's just a change of coordinates, but yeah, that's another issue. I'd like to go on. So I mentioned that from here to whatever, you need the general relativistic correction, and an idea to introduce this general relativistic correction into quantum gravity phenomenology was, for instance, the rainbow matrix. So when somebody mentions rainbow matrix, often people begins to, have some doubts about what you're saying. They tend to call you a crackpot, but it's not because of the idea of rainbow matrix. Rainbow matrix, it's not just the first idea, but they have many realizations in many approaches to quantum gravity. For instance, here we have this kind of realization was introduced in a Schrödinger model with a Hamiltonian inspired by general relativity. Here we have Finsler geometry. Finsler geometry is a very old theory. It has like 100 years. And lately, Girelli and Liberati noticed that introducing a modified dispersion relations, one can obtain a Finsler norm and then a Finsler momentum-dependent metric. Or you can also obtain a momentum-dependent metric through momentum-dependent from an energy flow approach. So there are many realizations, of course, but the problem is that mostly when one tries to do phenomenology of rainbow matrix, has to deal with stuff like that. So titles like black hole temperature with rainbow gravity and modified uncertainty principle, which is an article which deals with seven different parameters and obtains this kind of graphics in which this is a specific heat. So you have some phase transition or black hole somehow, or graphics like those in which you have massive gravitons plus rainbow matrix, who knows why. And okay. This is a pathology. This pathology is very common because usually, if we assume we are not having any phase transitions in black holes, usually that happens because you are considering an all-order solution when you have introduced a first-order correction. So yeah, that's just a mess. And the fact is that, yeah, you can have rainbows, but you are not going to have unicorns. Because you always have to know what you're saying when you're introducing different parameters. Maybe you're introducing corrections that are inconsistent with each other. So how can we introduce, how can we define a framework? So I'll spend a little bit on a framework in which you can introduce many corrections in a coherent way. Okay, this framework is a relative locality. And relative locality is a way to begin to introduce some corrections without changing too much. So the fact is that, let's concentrate in a framework in which Planck length is more or less zero. So we won't have commutators, weird commutators, but we'll still have modified Hamiltonian dynamics characterized by deformed Poisson brackets, and we will still have deformed, so a curved momentum space characterized by this parameter L. This kind of framework can help us to tame weird non-locality effects that can arise in quantum, often arise in quantum gravity. And in this case, I show a graphics in which we have this time delay effect, which is something we will analyze later. But in this framework, this time delay effect is just a dual effect to the redshift. So it's just an effect of curvature of momentum space, like the redshift is an effect of curvature of space-time. So when I was saying that we are dealing with a deformed momentum space, in the deformed momentum space we will have also a deformed algebra, a deformed Poincaré algebra. And this deformed Poincaré algebra allows us to keep 10 symmetries. There will be deformed symmetries, but there will still be 10. We can obtain the solution of the action of the boosts with respect to the rapidity parameter, which are those. Those are the classical special relativistic solutions. Those are the corrections. And from those corrections and from the relations, from the relation between the hyperbolic cosine square minus hyperbolic sine square, we can obtain the Hamiltonian of this system, which is the invariant element under boost, which is our modified dispersion relation, sorry. Okay, so we can try to do the same with space-time also. And we can obtain the invariant element of space-time, which is this ds square, where we have this z here, which is the momentum space metric. So we have some momentum-dependent metric, but it's not a rainbow metric. It's like the similar idea. The problem is that if we in this framework we define the metric through this relation with the Hamiltonian, we would obtain a line element which is not invariant under boost. The relation in this framework between the momentum space metric and the Hamiltonian is a little bit more complicated, but it's nothing impossible to deal with. And the important thing is that now we have a deformed Hamiltonian framework, which is consistent also with a deformed symplectic sector, which has a momentum-dependent metric, so can hold a lot of different phenomenologic effects. effects. Okay, so let's see what happened in a homogeneous and isotropic space-time case. So we have the simple Hamiltonian equations, which, okay, just finding the solution, one can easily find the deformed redshift effect, which depends on the energy, which gives us back the classical redshift when L goes to zero. We can also find the the word lines. And in the de Sitter limit, we see that we obtain the de Sitter word lines when L goes to zero. It's very, very easily. And moreover, we obtain an expression for the time delay, which is related to the in vacuo dispersion, in vacuo dispersion of particles due to this quantum gravity effect, which depends on the redshift. So we have a formula which we can try to test, and when we will. Here it's late shift because we call late shift the dual redshift effect. Okay, so this is it.
Can you just explain more?
What?
The late shift.
Late shift? Well, if you.
You just wrote the formula, but you haven't explained.
Ah, the effect is that two particles, yeah. Sure. Two particles with different energies would arrive. Okay. If we think at redshift, we have two particles that are emitted with the same energy, which arrive with different energies at the observer, given the instant in which they are emitted. For what concerns the late shift, we have two particles with different energies which are emitted at the same time and arrive at different times at the observers. So there are dual effects. One is in momentum space and the other one is in space-time. So yeah, we are basically saying that two particles with different energies emitted at the same time would arrive at the observer at the different times. So we can try to test this, and this is the second part of my talk, is about the data analysis. So basically, if we want to test the time of arrival of two particles emitted at the same time, the main source of information are the GRBs, because they are very, very, very sharp. And we will try to test both the emission of neutrinos from the GRB and the emission of gamma rays. We will have to analyze every information we will have of those two data sets. And then we will try to obtain some clues. Okay, so about GRBs. So what we know of GRBs is that they are homogeneously distributed in the sky, as well as cosmic rays. They are very energetic phenomena. And then there are many models that try to correlate the emission of cosmic rays with GRBs. We expect to observe a lot of high energy neutrinos correlated to those cosmic rays because they are mostly protons. And then many models predict the emission of neutrinos from some GRBs. Now, the Ice Cube Observatory have released some observation which predicts, which find no findings basically of neutrinos emitted from GRBs. Our hypothesis is that they are contradicting those theoretical models, because they are choosing a time window which is too narrow, and maybe there could be opening wide this time window, we could allow some different effects to be observed. So to be observed, sorry. So, okay, this is what we would like to observe. This is the time delay between the two particles, which depends on the energy and the distance. And the distance depends on the redshift in more or less the way we showed previously. And we also allow some fuzzy effects. We don't know what should be, but we have to admit it may exist. We have a okay. Our model depends on the energy and on the redshift, so we have to define some observables that incorporate both the time and Z, or the energy and Z. So we have these star observables, which we will see on the sides of our graphics, and those are the definitions. This is just to have the two-dimensional graphic with three variables. Okay.
I have a question actually.
Yeah.
Sorry. You start talking about gamma ray bursts and cosmic rays.
Yes.
And then you went from cosmic rays to neutrinos.
Yes.
So you're not talking about cosmic, normal cosmic rays, which are protons.
No. So I'm not going to talk about.
It's photons and it's neutrinos. Assuming that both photons and neutrinos suffer energy.
Yeah, we will assume that cosmic rays are emitted by gamma ray bursts, and then we will assume that neutrinos may be correlated to this emission.
Oh, the neutrinos may be generated not by gamma ray bursts, but by the cosmic rays.
Yeah, yeah, that's the idea.
That's the intention.
Okay, and if we. Let the time window being of a few seconds, then yeah, what the results of Ice Cube are telling us is that there is no correlation between GRBs and the emission of high energy neutrinos. So if we open wide the window, we will see. So this is what Ice Cube observes. Ice Cube is just an array of Cherenkov probes, Cherenkov stuff within the ice of South Pole. It can observe both shower events and track events. Track events are caused by a muonic neutrino which arrives and generates a muon which exits from in this direction and brings a lot of energy with it. So the reconstruction of the energy of this kind of events is not very good. The reconstruction of the energy of those kind of events is better, but they have a worse angular discrimination. But however, and a higher significance, which means that there's an higher probability that they are generated by an astrophysical event instead of being generated on the atmosphere. So we will cut out the track events from our analysis, at least for now, because just because the energy is so important with our analysis, and we want the reconstruction of the energy to be good, basically. So. This is the time window. We are basing the size of our time window on some prior analysis. And given that, okay, 3 days may be a good choice, the fact is that if we let the energy window to arrive until, I don't know, 1 TV, 2 1 PV, 2 PVs, we would have to open the time window until 10, 20 days or so, which is very, very complicated because any neutrino could have, could be correlated in this way to many different GRBs. We already have some multiple correlation, which is a problem for our analysis. But open the energy window too much would be too much a problem. So this is the compromise we are doing.
Just to get a sense of that, there's roughly one gamma ray burst a day somewhere in the sky.
Yes.
If you open your window for 6 days, that means somewhere in the sky there will be 6 gamma ray bursts.
Yes.
But you also have angular discrimination.
Yes.
So is it likely that you have more than one gamma ray burst?
Yeah, yeah, very much. With because, okay, another issue is that we have to test models in which neutrinos can arrive before and models in which neutrinos can arrive later. So,
right, so that gives you 6 days, 7 days.
Yeah, so it's not a 3 days time window, it's a 6 days time window. Time window.
One portion of the sky.
One portion of the sky, but the error of the neutrinos is pretty big. It's like 15 degrees or so.
15 degrees.
Yeah.
But 15 degrees squared over 4 pi squared is a lot less than 6.
Is what?
There's that still gives you enough angular resolution that if 1 out of 7 gamma ray bursts fell into that window, you'd feel lucky.
You're saying one over. I don't know. We did some previous analysis about that, and we obtained more or less the same results we obtained with the current data. We just with this 6 days time window, you can obtain also already like three correlation, so three candidates for each neutrino, and opening it to 12 days would have been would mean.
I understand. If over 6 days, you have six, you have three gamma ray bursts, right? So half the gamma ray bursts fall into your window.
Okay. Can I arrive to the angular distribution so that okay? Okay. So, the angular selection. We have we have the basically a bubble of Cherenkov light, and this bubble of Cherenkov light is more or less related to some area in the sky. So the error related to this Cherenkov bubble is pretty big. In this case, is how much? I don't know, like 15 degrees probably. And you also have an error related to the gamma ray burst itself, which can be from 1 up to 7 or so. And we will allow in our selection. A superposition of between the GRB and the neutrino of 2 sigmas, which means a big portion of the sky, which means to let in a lot of noise. Okay, yeah, this lets a lot of noise in, so many candidates for each neutrinos, which we have to treat later. But we didn't want to cut out any candidate, any good candidate. So we prefer to open wide the angular window too much instead of cutting out data which could be good. This is more or less the idea. Okay. So this is our data set. We analyzed 4 years of Ice Cube data from 2010 to 2014. Of those 54 neutrinos, just 21 are within our energy window and are showered neutrinos. And then we are confronting it with a GRB database. Those are the candidates. And we can see that many neutrinos have multiple candidates, which is something we will have to deal with. The main source of the error, of this error bar, these big error bars, is due to the redshift, because often we don't know which is the redshift of any of the GRBs. So, okay, we will have to deal both with those problems, and we will decided to deal with those in a statistical way. So, we will generate like 100,000 fake candidates, and we will test whether the fake candidates will have a result in the correlation coefficient, which is bigger than our real data. So if the fake data have a bigger correlation coefficient, then they will win. In the other case, they will lose. So we tried to test our candidates, and what we obtain is that in the best case scenario, we have a very high correlation coefficient, and our data lose only in the 0.03% of the cases. Okay, in the worst correlation scenario, we still have a good correlation coefficient, and we have a 1% false alarm probability. In the case we decide to select our data.
What is this best correlation, worst correlation selection?
Okay. The best correlation is the group of data in which we choose only one of those multiple candidates, which have the best correlation, the higher value of the correlation. In the other case, it's the worst. Okay. And we can also choose our candidates by the minimization of the angular distance. And this is a case which lies in between the best correlation and the worst correlation scenario.
Can you explain this? What do you mean by this?
Psi is the distance, and sigma is the error. So the candidates which minimize this, which would be
the how we select a candidate.
Yeah, how we select the candidates. Okay. Yeah.
You had 20-something candidates on the previous slide.
Yeah.
Why is it you only talk about three now?
Okay, we have 21 shower, so we have 54 candidates. Of those 54, 21 are shower and lie between our energy window.
Right,
okay, then we go to the angular selection.
And these are the 21 right here?
No, those are 14. Because of those 21, we select 14 from the angular selection.
So 7 of the 21 have no gamma ray bursts within 6-day window within which I record. Okay, so you throw out those 7.
No. Those are 9 neutrinos. 14 are the gamma ray bursts, because some neutrinos have multiple candidates.
So you're down to 9 neutrinos.
Yeah.
And those
from 54 to 4 to 9.
And those have between 1 and 3 gamma ray bursts to correlate somewhere.
Yes. And we have to choose the better scenario to work with.
Yeah, why do you choose not just 1/3 of them? Shouldn't you do a fair test by trying to draw a line through all 9 of these?
Trying to align?
You're trying to find out if there's a correlation between redshift, between distance and energy.
We did trying to.
So why is it fair to pick your 3 best candidates?
No. We're not picking the best candidates. We are picking the best candidates, the worst candidates, and the best angular selection. And then we will treat separately.
For each neutrino, right?
For each neutrino.
Right. But that would give you. So for the neutrinos that have multiple gamma ray bursts, you pick the best out of each one.
But also the worst.
Okay, so can you explain again what does it mean? picks a best one.
Okay. Okay, this is our data set. This is our data set. And it's pretty messy because we have multiple candidates here, here, and here. So what we have to choose one of those three, or choose one of those other three, or choose one of those two. So we have many combinations. We can choose one, one, and one, or one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Why don't you take all this data and say the ends to your answer?
We did. We picked all the data, and we analyzed all the data, but we can show the best, the worst, and the best angular selection.
Are blue negative time and black positive time?
Black arrived before. And blue arrive after the gamma ray burst. Okay. Can I go on?
I still haven't really understood how what defines the best split.
What is your definition of best?
Okay, the best. Yeah, the best case scenario is the one that align better, that maximize the correlation coefficient.
You try to find a plot
in
between, and
at the end,
you try to minimize the error for this. That's the best.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you fit to the pattern, but you have for one neutrino, you have usually three photons.
Yes.
So
yes.
Yeah, so there is a best scenario where they fit the best one of the three, and there is a worst scenario that they fit.
But if it means that you're trying to draw a straight line.
Yes.
I have a question. What does best mean?
That means that fits the best.
Yeah, the
model you're looking at? Or
yeah.
Or he was saying the correlation.
It's 9 events, but you have 14 dots, and you try to find the most straightest line by choosing 9 of these 14 dots or something.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's great. So then, why, once you do that, why are you done? Why? You then showed us three events.
No, let's see.
I didn't say three yet. Okay, this is the best case scenario. This is the best case scenario parameters of the model. We choose here to show this eta to be eta plus and eta minus, in which eta plus is the one that passes through the blue.
What these parameters?
Okay, in general, eta plus is coefficient for the blue dots, and eta minus is the coefficient for the black dots. In general, they can be independent. So we would have to do two different analyses for the black dots and the blue dots.
What are the blue dots and the black dots? Advanced with
blue arrive after, and black arrive before the GRP. But okay, in this case, we will show just the case in which
dispersion relation and delta is. Eta is the shift in the dispersion.
Yes, delta is the fuzzy contribution. It's the weird fuzzy stuff that gives us this weird effect, which is something we would have to allow in.
So you're
but
assuming a fuzziness that grows with energy or something.
Yeah.
Do you mind describing the dispersion?
Should it here. This is the effect. So it's eta plus or minus delta, basically.
Mm-hmm.
OK. So when
roughly there's an equal number of events which arrive before and an equal number which arrive after. So if I take the average, I get zero?
No, we are choosing one case in which we have this eta plus and eta minus to be one is minus the other. So in one case we would have to because we are showing here the graphic for the modulus, the absolute value of the delta t.
That's what I'm asking. So if I, you know, if I see the time could be an array. If I average and put the sign back, I get roughly zero.
An average. What do you mean with that? Yes.
You can test two hypotheses. You can test the hypothesis that there's a holistically dependent effect in the interference of energy, of velocity on energy, in which case you would expect a sign difference.
Usually it's either it goes faster or it goes
slower.
So there's one more model where it's helicity dependent, and then it's consistent to have an average.
Yeah, the problem is that ice cube doesn't measure the helicity of the events, so we don't know. We cannot discriminate. So we have to analyze both together. And once that we have the model, we can also try to understand what's the noise within this model. So we can generate 10,000 combination of n data generated by the model and 21 minus n points generated random. And we can try to select in how many of those cases we obtain 14 candidates. And this happens more or less with the significance. In this case, the good points would be would have a peak on 2. However, if we try to select the ones that have a correlation bigger, the groups of data that have a correlation bigger than our worst correlation, which is 0.8, we have a peak here, and we could say that 6 maybe of our points could be good, so could be generated by the model according to this frequency distribution. So our hypothesis, basing on our data, is that at least 3 of the points we showed before are at least noise. So that we had 54 events. Of those 54, we select 21. Of those 21, we select 14. Of those 14, 9 are good. Of those 9, probably 3 are noise. So that's what I'm saying. So okay, and that's it for the neutrino analysis. We can try to those are the data. We just have to wait for more data to come. A statistical analysis cannot be done on these few points. So we will have to wait a few years at least.
When you add the fuzziness, you add a parameter. If you subtract that parameter and you test just the model without the fuzziness, does the significance of the fits go up or down? If you test a model with one fewer parameter without the fuzziness, then you're testing a model with one fewer parameters.
Okay, I guess the significance go up. Yeah, it goes up because the correlation of the generated point would be stronger than the one with the fuzziness. So if you see here, there are a few points which are randomly distributed, but which are generated by the model, which are the red dots. And the green are the random ones. So yeah, without one parameter, we could allow we could have more significance. Yeah, but we don't know. We still don't know which model is consistent. We still have some theoretical issues on basing on that. A clearer picture is for what concerns photons, because photons seem to have a more ordinate, more clear behavior. So photons generated by.
You're saying you have to wait more for data. So how long do you have to wait to double the sample size?
4-6 years. Ah, okay. Okay, they release a new batch of data any 2 years, every two years. This year they didn't let any data out. We don't know why. They should. We know that they have those new data. They are not releasing them, but I will talk about new data later. Let me finish. Okay, talking about photons. Okay, the effect on photons is smaller. Then we have to understand, to better understand when a gamma ray burst kicks in. So when the gamma ray burst starts. So, which cannot be the time in which we measure the first photon, and we still have also a redshift on this time, which we would have to consider. So, what we are going to observe with photons is this model. With this model, we have less parameters because we have just one eta, and we don't have eta plus or minus given by the chirality. And we have less gamma ray bursts, which are candidate for our analysis, because we need gamma ray bursts with sufficiently high energy explosion burst and observed energy. And we have to know, we prefer to know what the redshift is. So the okay, this is what the data look like. In this case, on these two cases, we can see some effect dependent on the energy, some time delay effect on the high energetic photons. In these two cases, there are less effect. And this case, in particular, is the one that could kill every.
Tell us the axis.
Okay, here is the time from the time of the measurement of the photon from with respect to the zero of the database. And here we have the energy at the emission on this other axis.
Where's the red?
Okay, the red dots are the dots within 3 degrees from the source. The yellow dots are the one at within 3 and 10 degrees from the source, and the rest, green dots, are within 30 degrees from the source. So, okay, this one, I was saying that this one in particular could kill any possibility to observe any in vacuum dispersion effect. However, the redshift is lower than the others. So the effect we would expect from this gamma ray burst is smaller. And we have just one photon that kills everything. So statistically, it's less relevant than the rest. Okay, we can if we analyze all the 9 gamma ray bursts, all the photons of all the 9 gamma ray bursts, okay, we have to select an energy window and a time window, which are selected in order to have the right amount of data in without tossing out any good data. This is the selection of points of high energy photons. And this is how they look like on a graphic. So it's this kind of observation was already done by Ma and collaborators, but when they first published their paper, they didn't have this point yet. So the impressive thing is that this point came out after this straight line was painted. So, and it lies on the straight line. This one is 090510, which is the problematic one, which, yeah, is outside the straight line, but not so much, and statistically it doesn't weight so much. The correlation is 0.845, which is high, and it beats all the fake candidates that we can generate, often, and it's beaten only in the 0.035% of the cases. So the photons seem to be more consistent than the neutrino ones. For the neutrino, we still need some time. However, if we put the neutrinos and the photons on the same graphic, we can see that there may be some consistency. The problem is this empty space here, which we would like to, I don't know, fill with other particles, other future experiments. And this may be the conclusions of the talk. However, I have a few more slides. If I have 5 more minutes, how? Okay. So, I was just going to say that we need to better understand the theory of the Invaco dispersion, because we need to understand whether there is actually some effect due to the chirality of the neutrinos, which is something we actually don't know. And we need to extend our analysis to photons with emission below 40 GeV, which is something that have been done. And I will, I was trying to, I had to confront this problem sooner or later. Ice Cube doesn't have published their data yet, but we know from a PDF of some slides of a conference in Busan in Korea that they have more data. And the problem of those data is that they are not so significant, because they have we have 5 points over 13 candidates, and if we repeat the analysis of the noise, we obtain that most likely we have 0 candidates, 0 good candidates of this new data set. And this is a problem because it lowers the significance of our previous data. Something that could be a good news, but we don't know, is that the chaos we see in the neutrino distribution may be explained by some other component in the neutrino flux, which is not included in the Ice Cube analysis. So, which may be may suggest that we could cut out all the neutrinos until the 150 TeV. So all the analysis should be repeated from the neutrinos over 150 TeV. The problem is we have just three of our neutrinos, which are the one that align best. But we are talking about 3 more points, and which is a problem. And this is what the overall significance would mean with the new data from the conference in Busan that they didn't publish yet. So that's a problem for us, and that means that for what concerns neutrinos, we may have to wait another 2 or 4 years more. For what concerns photons, there are good news, though, because, let's look at this graphic, this picture here. If one looks this picture long enough, you can begin to see some correlation.
This
between couples. Yeah, this is one gamma ray burst. Yeah, it's the one that shows the this feature best in the the redshift of this one was blah 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 blah. Okay, is 1.8. Okay, so we want to test whether there is this correlation between the couples of the photons, and actually, so what we expect if we try to fit any couple of data, we expect some distribution which have a peak in zero, of course, because you can see that the zero straight lines are very recurrent. But however, if there is some effect, we would have a second peak in the distribution. And this is something that is actually observed. And we have a second peak around 30 here. And if we take into account not pairs, but triplets, which kill the zero alignment effect, we have a bigger, even a bigger peak, also with a peak in 30. And moreover, they very well align with the other points, the high energetic points. This is the formula of this straight line. So there's a better possibility for photons to have new phenomenology in the near future, and less for the neutrinos, unfortunately. But however, what I wanted to say is that quantum gravity phenomenology, as anything else in life, should be taken cum grano salis, avoiding all the excesses and feelings. A physicist should not fall in love with his theories, but he should test them and try to do it the best he can with the best data he has. And that's the best we could do with the few data nature gives us. So that's it.
Another question of the slide just before.
This one?
What would be the candidates to fill out that gap?
I don't know. We should observe other kinds of particles, but I wouldn't know, because the problem is that in order to observe time delays, you have to know the exact moment of the emission at the source. Maybe some supernova or something. Last supernova, we have data from the supernova of the 1987, but we didn't have IceCube, Antares, or other experiments. So maybe we may have something in between with the observation of something like that. Some sudden event that gives us the exact time of emission, and in which we could try to see if there's some correlation between the time delay and the energy of the events.
So what about the neutron star merging? They don't produce ions.
Okay, the problem is still that we don't have the data because the first LIGO observation were of 2015. Our data are until 2014. And for what concerns the new data that we saw on the PDF slide, blah, 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 there seems to be more or less nothing.
You mean there's nothing, because there's no high energy photo or
there are no high energy neutrinos in the time windows of the, how many are them now, four gravitational wave events. So we don't have enough data now, for now, but maybe, I don't know.
But maybe it's not completely ruled out.
Yeah. Yes.
Can you go back to the graph with the parallel lines? One chart just before it.
Okay.
This one? So what's the interpretation? The claim is that the pairs of photons which follow the same line originated at the same time.
Yeah, maybe they've been originated here, but one arrives here and the other one here, for instance.
Does the top two mean that they originated before the burst began?
For photons, no, it's the opposite. The high energetic photons seems to arrive later than the low energetic photons.
No, I know that, but if I click, say, the top line, top diagonal line.
This one?
And I follow that to low energy photons. I point back something that began, that is the GRB before the GRB. For the zero time, is that a problem?
Mm.
It seems to have started out earlier than the rest.
Yeah,
of
but we don't see any.
So is that a problem?
I don't think so. No.
If I take the zero time as when the burst started, shouldn't that point around 40 GeV? Can you point to that point around 40 GeV? Should that tell me that there's a low bound on the retardation? Because that couldn't have started out before.
But maybe. We don't know anything about these kind of sources.
Do we? Well, I don't know, but is there a model in which there are very energetic photons emitted long before anything else happens? I don't know. I'm just suggesting that I would be more comfortable if there was not the top two lines there. Because they suggest that those photons, if they've been retarded according to that slope, they started out like before the gamma ray burst.
Yeah, but there's no guarantee that we got all the low energy photons, right? We may miss completely all the low energy photons that actually got emitted earlier.
Well, that may be, but there are papers in which people use the early arrival of very high energy photons, like it's a 52 GeV photon, to put lower bounds. Upper bound on the retardation. And they would never bound would disagree with your result. It's your finding here.
Yeah, but nothing, nothing tells you that they must have been generated, you know, here. Why should you select only a few of those data? So, yeah, the fact is that...
There's an assumption that the low energy stuff, the infrared stuff, when that turns on is when the event turned on. The event didn't start with a few very high energy photons and then turn on a second or two later with low energy photons. If anything, the astrophysical models would suggest the opposite, that the thing starts glowing in the infrared and then some energy builds up and the very high energy photons get pushed up. I'm not an astrophysicist, but I've heard a number of talks where people assume that. Just like in the 0905, you know very well the reason why that one photon is so different.
Because it's so well aligned with a low energetic photon. That's it. There's no conclusive result yet. We may try to. Yeah, it's an idea to falsify the theory. However, why not?
Are there any more questions? Otherwise, thanks so much.
Okay.